The following is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of The Teardown. My name is Jeff Luck, and I'm along with my grumpy coworker, Jordan Bianchi, who, despite interviewing Michael Jordan for the first time ever, he's still his typical grouchy self. So welcome, Jordan. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I finally got to interview MJ. It's been on the bucket list for a while, and got to check that off. Like, granted, the interview lasted 3 seconds, and he gave me three words. But
he said three words.
But you know what? We're counting it.
Hey, that's three words more than Michael Jordan has ever said to me. So
there we go.
I'm jealous. I'm jealous of your three words. You asked him how it was to be there for the first time when his driver won a race, and what did he say?
I love it.
Groundbreaking. Like, boom. Groundbreaking journalism right there, folks. But hey, you got the interview.
Hey, you know what? That doesn't win me some kind of award, then the whole thing is fraud. So
I love it.
Yeah. Thank
you. I love it. That's what he said. Well, there was a Talladega race, and we'll talk about whether everyone loved that or not. Tyler Reddick certainly loved it when Brad Keselowski and Michael McDowell got together coming to the checkered flag on the final lap. So that is where we will start, because Jordan, I got to tell you, so here I am at home, right? I'm not at Talladega today like you are. And when you're watching at home, sometimes the broadcast feels very delayed.
Yes.
And I do not like watching Talladega specifically on any sort of delay. Any sort of super speedway race, I need to know what has happened with the big one right away. So I have different things. You know, typically for a race, I'll be like listening to the scanner and I'll watching on TV and whatever. But today I had like MRN and the scanner. And then I pulled up the NASCAR drive thing where you can see the in-car cameras. Technology on there is a little shaky, or at least I couldn't get it to, you know, be on the whole time. It kept freezing up on me. But for the end, you know, it was obvious that Brad Keselowski was going to be part of it. So I switched to Brad Keselowski's in-car camera only, and I put on his radio only. And I was like basically in the passenger seat with him for the last few laps, because I figured one way or another, Brad Keselowski is probably going to figure into this. He was running second on the low lane behind McDowell, and then you had Reddick and Truex on the high lane, right? And trying to make something happen. And obviously, once they got 2x2, I know the third lane was trying to come, but they weren't really being able to make enough progress. So it was going to come down to those two lanes. So coming to the checkered there, I mean, first of all, the fact that they even hadn't all wadded it up with the big one before the white, it was, you know, amazing. But everybody was, you know, trying to make a move, pushing hard. And McDowell, you know, obviously Keselowski, he was planning the whole time. Look, I'm going to try to get a run from Gregson behind me. He goes up. McDowell blocks. Good block, right? So then Keselowski says, all right, I need to go back down. McDowell, second block, not so good. You know, he obviously was going for it. He was 23rd in points coming into today. You can't blame him whatsoever. This was his chance. He wasn't running in the top, you know, 16 in points like he was last year. So he's going for it. Certainly don't blame him, but that move maybe had, I don't know, what, 20% chance of working? Hey, if it worked, and if he was, you know, this much closer in front of, you know, Keselowski, or Keselowski lifts or whatever, then he pushes him to the win and he gets in the playoffs. But if not, he gets wrecked. He's obviously willing to accept that. And he wrecked himself and the field. And that caused Keselowski to slow up just enough. And he had put himself in position. But Reddick blasts by there on the high side. And that is the race.
Yeah. It reminded me of 2009 when Brad won his first race at Talladega. Much kind of the same, right? Like, Brad was kind of positioned there. Carl came across the nose. Carl spins out. But in that instance, Brad was able to stay in the gas and cross the finish line first. This one, he wasn't able to. You can, it's in that situation, it's really hard to throw a block and get away with it. And Mike Dowell did that. And then the second one, it's like your luck ran out and you were just a little too late there. You can't fault him, because that's what you have to do. If he doesn't do that, he doesn't win the race. You're in a tough situation there, but That's part of this. That's part of speedway racing is these blocks. And when these blocks go bad, they go bad way, man. And it's unfortunate that what transpired, but you can't, it's McDowell's fault for causing the accident, but it's not his fault, if that makes sense. Like, that's just what really, like, any driver in that situation is going to do that. So it's, I have a really hard time putting blame on him, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, I don't know if any driver in that situation is going to do that. Just because if you're already in the playoffs, right, and you're thinking, hey, I'll throw one block, and if I finish second here and I don't win it, I'll try to drag race on the line. Okay, I really think this was a product of somebody that's not in the playoffs and looking at probably this end road courses as their shot, right? And again, you got to go for it. I'm sure he didn't want to wreck the field. Or I'm sure, you know, I don't think he thought, I'm going to wreck here. I thought, he probably was like, this is going to be really, 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 really close. But
I don't think you have time to think in that situation. I mean, it happens so quick. It's not, you're not thinking about that. And I would actually maybe argue the other side too is, if you're a driver who's got multiple wins, you might be willing to be more willing to take that risk and say, I'm willing to throw that block because if I get crashed out, I've already got wins. I'm in the playoffs. I don't care. Where if I can get away with it and take that chance, I just scored myself another win. So I can see both sides of the coin there.
I don't know, man, because right there at that point, when you're coming from the high side back down low and there's possibly a driver there and you're not clear, you're getting hooked into the fence, right? So
yeah, I mean,
or you're possibly going airborne or you're, I mean.
But we've seen guys throw those kind of blocks. I mean, it doesn't happen. We've seen those blocks happen and where bad things haven't been the result. So you can get away with it. He threw a block right before that and got away with it. So, like, I mean.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you just. I just don't think you have time to like process all of this in your thing. I think the fact is you're just racing for the win and this is all happening. And now maybe hindsight's 2020 or something. And you look back, oh, I woulda, shoulda, coulda. But I think in that instance, you're racing for a win for a driver and a team whose opportunities to win are not necessarily often. And you're going for it. And, you know, I think that's just what this is.
Well, I do feel bad for Brad that, you know, he did everything right. You know, yeah. He, that NASCAR Drive app I was talking about, you know, they have the SMT data, I guess, basically, or, you know, they have their throttle and all of a sudden on the backstretch there, maybe coming to, yeah, I think it was on the backstretch, maybe coming into turn three, his brake thing lit up. And I thought for a minute, oh, he's wrecking. You know, that's why he's holding the brake all of a sudden, right? Well, he was trying to create enough of a gap. He was trying to drag the brake back to Gregson and get a run on McDowell. And so he would get that push coming out of four, right? So he put himself in position. He did what he had to do. It was sort of a textbook thing. And he waited until he didn't make his move too early. You know, he was going for it. It's just unfortunate for him. It was the second block was no good and it ended up costing him enough momentum. So Ford remains winless while Toyota completely steals one after wrecking themselves seemingly on their strategy. Although that wreck sort of ended up putting Reddick in position to be up front in the first place, right?
That is correct. So go back quickly to Brad real quick. He was being a great Ford teammate because over those last, 15 laps or so, like he was Michael McDowell's wingman. Like he was not going to do anything to pass the 34 car. Like just, I'm going to push you. I'm going to help you. We're going to do this together. And you could see that. And he did everything right. And unfortunately for him, it doesn't work out. To your point about Reddick and everything, yes. So let's just kind of just walk through this. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So... what I was told was before the race, the Toyota teams had in their back pocket this strategy of, listen, if the Chevy and Ford teams are going to save fuel, and that's what they're going to do in stage one and two, we can't beat them necessarily because we don't have the numbers. It's going to be hard to pass that kind of thing and get track position, right? We need to kind of figure out a way to jump them. So if this happens, if the Ford and Chevy teams in stage one and two use this strategy of saving fuel and kind of back everybody up, what we are going to do is try to jump them in stage three by pitting early. And we are going to wait until we're in our window so we can make it to the end of the race. And what we're going to do then is we're going to stick together and run. And they estimated that they can run 4 seconds faster than the other cars on the track. So they would have enough time, enough laps to one, get to the finish on fuel, and two, run down those other cars who are going to probably have to pit. Some of them may have been tried to play the fuel gamble game and try to get it to the end of the race without having to pit. It probably wouldn't have failed. And so one of two ways are they're going to probably vault in the lead. One is if everyone else of the Ford and Chevy teams pit under green, they're going to pass them. Two is if this race runs green, they're going to run them down. And three, the other three is if there's a caution, everyone else is probably going to have to pit anyway or wants to pit. We're going to use the track position. That's where the Reddick thing came in, is when everyone else pitted because of the caution, he stayed on the racetrack. He shot up towards the front, and that put him in the position to be there at the end. So it's weird because in one hand, you look at the strategy, you're like, oh, my goodness. You're like, you guys just took all each other out. You had everything set up perfectly. But it's still at the end of the day, it did work as designed. And they had the track position, and a Toyota was in victory lane celebrating.
Well, it's interesting because I would have liked to see what really would have happened, because it felt like, you know, I don't know, from the radios, from the broadcast. Now, there wasn't enough time to really let it play out. But once Toyota did that, it seemed like it was going to force mm-hmm. Chevrolet and Toyota's hand to the point where they – what if they were going to try to run long and save fuel all the way to the end and all that stuff? Because you remember right before then you heard the Ford saying, let's run these Chevys out of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, let's go faster and run these guys out so that they have to pit before. But could the Fords have, you know, then they were going fast. So I think that was that sequence, that same
yeah,
sequence, right?
The Fords would have ran out. The Fords would have been in the same position.
So they were going to have to... they were going to have to pit once the Toyotas pit. Any thought of let's go super slow was going to be negated by the Toyotas coming so fast.
Running 4 seconds faster than them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they would have timed out. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think it's fast. Wasn't it like 6 seconds slower in stage one or something?
I don't know. I mean, I just, what I was told was in stage three at that juncture of the race, they estimated they could go 4 seconds. I don't know. I don't know about the 6 second part. That was a different part of the race.
Right. I get that. Well, obviously, the extreme fuel savings was a topic at Daytona, and it was obviously going to play a factor again today, and people thought even more so, and I think that's exactly what we saw, right? And so there's the great debate, obviously, of that was happening on social media during the race of, hey, this sucks, or this doesn't suck, or it's not so bad, right? I've made my point, I think we did after Daytona as well, that look, I mean, this is a 500-mile super speedway race. There's going to be times in a race where they're logging laps, right? If you are mm-hmm. racing super hard for an entire super speedway race, you are not going to finish the super speedway race in all likelihood. And I get that in a previous package, you could slice and dice and drop to the back and make moves. It's obviously not reality with this car. What's happened with this car, clearly, is this has become a track position race. And because it's a track position race, everybody's setting themselves up to, whether it's the end of the stage or the end of the race, to spend as little time on pit road as possible. So, you know, just take a few seconds of fuel and then you get your track position that way, because you cannot pass once they start going two by two all out. Yeah, you could pass when they were all saving fuel dramatically and going three wide. You could do whatever you want. It was sort of like the Bristol tire thing, right? Where you could go as fast as you wanted to. BJ McLeod could go from 37th to first. You know what I mean? you could get up there, right? If you wanted to. But the downside of that was you would run out of fuel faster and you would lose your track position. So I think Toyota actually, they were playing it pretty well there by trying to short pit everybody and force their hand. It just didn't work out. But everybody's saying, well, if you change the length of the stages, could that make a difference? Or I still think whatever happens with this car, with this package, what they're doing, it's really not going to matter, because ultimately everybody still wants to spend, if it's going to go green, they still want to spend as little time on pit road as possible for the last stop, which means they're going to be trying to save as much as possible, right? Like,
yes,
that's the strategy. That's what has been discovered. So you can't really go back on that. The solution would be to get a car that is like a generation ago where you can weave your way up through. But that is not the current reality. So as this continues, the Daytona Summer Race, for instance, is going to be the same thing, right? Like, and it's shorter, so maybe the strategy changes a little bit, but it's still the same. So this is what it is at this point. And I'm, you know, is it great? No, but
what
I'd still like, take that over the single file train racing against the wall if I had to choose. So
I don't understand why there's this thought of super speedway races. I have always been ran 100% flat out. Like, that seems to be the consensus on social media. Like, oh, it's 100% rule. Why they're not running 100%. They need to run harder. Very few super speedway races in the history of NASCAR have been ran that way. More often than not, it's managing the race and putting yourself in position there. And as you said, Jeff, there's often long stretches of single file racing where people are just riding it out, counting down the laps and waiting until the end. And then the craziness happens. And so I don't understand why this is so bad of this fuel mileage thing. Like, what do you want? Like, you want to see racing. You got racing. You have a strategy element now that is certainly adds different complexities to this. We saw that with the Toyota strategy. We hear a lot about how these races, oh, it's kind of it's luck. And sure, it's luck to some degree, but now these teams kind of manage it a little bit too. They can kind of, you know, if they can do the Toyota strategy, or they can do a different strategy, and it's not just getting yourself in position and hopefully getting lucky at the end. Like, I'm not offended by this. I really am not, because this isn't much different than what it was before. Like, there was always times in these races where guys like, oh, we're just going to ride here. Like, we are just going to ride here. And that's, to me, it's not much different.
I mean, it's different in the sense that they really cannot do anything, right? Like, they're not really racing, essentially. But
you can do
the first half
though.
Of the race.
But you
they can't
if,
move.
You, if
I
you
mean,
decide
once they go two by two, they can't move.
If
anywhere.
You can make, you saw guys go three wide today.
Yeah, but
and
that
if you
was because
if you're running in the
ba- saving,
if you're running
so.
In the back, if you're running in the back, and you decide, you know what, I want to get to the front, and all these other guys are running 50 to whatever percent at throttle, you have an opportunity then to say, you know what, I'm going to run more than that, and I'm going to push my way to the front. We saw it with some guys.
But that's in the part of the stages where they're saving fuel. Once they make that pit stop and then go all out, and they're actually racing for it, your track position sort of is what it is, right? Like, you're sort of, and if you pull out a line, nobody's going with you. If you try to go on the third line, it doesn't work as well. We saw it. The people were trying to form the third lane at the end of the race. It didn't go anywhere. At the beginning of the race, people were flying, gaining 10 positions at a time, it seemed like, you know? So it's not the traditional super speedway racing. And I also don't think that it's a great sell for fans to be like, hey, check out this like road course type strategy at Talladega. You know, that's not what people, you know, romanticize about the Dale Jr. days of super speedway racing, where you could, you know, and even Dale Sr., you know, going to that Talladega race where he came all the way, what was he, you know, 20th or something?
18th
in the final, how many laps? You know this.
Yeah, like four or five, something like that.
Yeah. So he all the way to the front just because he was damn good and his car was damn good. Like, people romanticize about those kind of days, right? That's not going to happen with this car. So that's why everybody's like, well, we got to not take very much fuel on pit road so we can get our track position and have a good pit stop and stuff. And look, it is different. I think it could be worse, because there's been some Talladega races. That Talladega race of like, what was it, fall 2018, maybe, mm-hmm. where they ran against the wall almost the whole time. SHR mm-hmm. dominated.
Sure.
And nobody, I mean, that was terrible. So
yeah, 2015, Earnhardt led like the final 30 laps and nobody could pull out and make a pass.
So, you know, I will take this looking like, again, 72 lead changes, sixth most lead changes in a race in NASCAR history. I know that doesn't, I know why that happened, but people, now you see people on Twitter, they'll be like, oh, I really missed the tandem racing. That was
That's
completely
ridiculous.
Artificial lead changes. That was 80 whatever lead changes. That was artificial, because that was, And at the time, by the way, everybody hated the tandem racing. This is why this conversation drives me crazy.
Like, this is just like maddening because we're having this conversation now. And then if you flip to something else, we're like, oh, well, no, we want this instead. It's like you're constantly chasing your tail. This is what it is. This is super speedway racing. I will contend that I think guys could make moves. There was opportunities to pass and make some opportunities to do some things.
Just on the tandem point real quick, because it triggers me or something. People will say, I've seen this comment today. Oh my gosh, what if Twitter was around when like the tandem racing people it was around and people freaking hated it. I was living on Twitter during those times. There was no positivity about this racing. People freaking were like, this, they've got to get rid of this. They got to change it back. All these years later, I don't know if people have seen highlights or clips of the close finishes. They're like, this was great. Oh yeah, they should bring this back. It looked so freaking stupid. And everybody's like, what happened to our beloved pack racing at Talladega and Daytona? They're just going around like the love bugs or whatever. So please don't come at me with that, at least. I mean, you can make the other arguments that this, you know, you want a different package or whatever, but don't say that tandem was better than this. Please. No, it wasn't. It really wasn't. Sorry. Anyway.
No. I mean, I think what it is too is you had that close finish at Dega in what, 2011? Is that the closest finish in NASCAR history?
I think closest finish, yeah.
Yeah, or one of the closest, one of whatever it is.
No, because I think that came up when the Atlanta race happened earlier this year. They're like, oh, that Talladega one was closer.
Yeah, that was because of tandem. And it's like, it's, no. That, if you talk about contrived, you talk about, you know, a form of racing that is just going to turn people off. Having drivers intentionally give up the lead so their teammate can leave or their pusher can hop in front of them. And then, by the way, how many times have we heard, and Dale's talked about this, so many guys have said this, where it was like they were so frustrated. It's like they wanted to pass, but they couldn't, you know, and because they had to stay with their guy, they had to be the wingman, and they couldn't make moves, that kind of thing. That the tandem era was terrible.
I agree. No argument here.
I feel like we have this conversation about quality of rate. Well, we have the conversation about quality racing every single week. But it just, when it comes to super speedways, it's like there is no perfect solution, because whatever you're going to get is never going to be satisfy you. You're going to have races that are more entertaining than some others. That's just the way it is. And we've heard, like, you go back to the era of when guys could make big moves, right? You talk about that. Like, we heard about that all the time. Like, the closing rate speeds were too fast, or, you know, the things would happen, or guys would get too aggressive and because they were trying to force their way. Like, there's you can look at the positives, that's fine, but there's also the other side of it, too. You got to take that into account.
Yeah, I just feel like the previous generation car, though, like the final super speedway package for the last couple of years before the next gen, was like really, really, really good, if I recall. So I think that's also when this comes along, you're like, dang, you know, especially if you want to play into the narrative for people that don't like the next gen on short tracks and road courses, they're like, ah, super speedways too, you know. But again, I think there are a lot of, look, let's be honest, a lot of super speedway racing draws in the casual fans, mm-hmm. right? Of course, the hardcore fans watch, but this is also, these races have the higher ratings of any type of track.
Yeah,
it draws in cool. The casuals, right? And when the casuals turn it on and they see three wide for lap after lap, they don't know why necessarily, or they don't even hate why it's happening. They're just like, this is cool, you know? And so that's probably good for NASCAR in a way, right? Because they're like, oh, wow, this is crazy. Look at this racing. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. And look, nobody's ever going to unanimously love super speedway racing for all the things that happens. This is an ongoing conversation. But I'm just coming from a place where I think, folks, it could be worse. It has been worse. So if you're going to introduce some strategy into it, as you laid out, okay, at least there's something to talk about there. That's, you know, the teams are planning something, as you laid out for Toyota. Okay, I could accept that. It's not single file against the wall. That's the worst. So that's purely logging laps where it's just a joke. So I get the driver's frustration, though. I really do. I do.
Yeah. Right. But they also were frustrated with the previous package too, because that previous package, we heard a lot about closing speeds. Remember Logano's crash here when he went airborne, and he, you know, that was byproduct of that, and that the guys are closing too quick and you can't do it. So like, I just feel like we always romanticize what it used to be. And it's like, that's not always the case. Like there's, it's not all sunshine and rainbows on the other side there.
And I would guess that at some point of some super speedway race, every single year that I've been covering NASCAR, which is the 20 years now, at least on one of the super speedway races, somebody's got out of the car and said, this type of racing is stupid. They're going to kill somebody, or this is, they're going to get somebody hurt, blah, blah, blah. So it's always, again, you're not going to sort of perfect this, I don't think, but because it's always on the fine line of, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. All right, listen, speaking of getting somebody hurt, we had sort of some late breaking news here right before we came on the podcast. We need to acknowledge that Erik Jones was in that vicious wreck of the Toyotas, and now he complained of back pain right after he, after the crash, right? And it didn't sound good. Surprisingly, he then walks out of the care center and does his interviews and just says, you know, I'm sore. It kind of took me aback, like, yikes, that seems like an awfully quick, if he was saying how much pain he was in on the radio, how is he getting released from the care center so quickly? But he was out anyway. Since then, he then returned to the care center, and NASCAR sent him to a local hospital. Currently, as we're recording this, you know, relatively after the race, I don't even know if he's at the hospital yet, right? So we don't have any news to share on whether he will be out or what his injury is. Certainly, we don't know if he needs a replacement, anything like that. But obviously, very concerning. That was a really, really, really hard hit and looked pretty bad.
That's head on into the wall going into a corner like that. That's bad. And you could see the impact of that. It was even before we knew the severity of it, like you just saw it. You're like, oh, like you just cringe. I heard the radio transmission he had to his team immediately afterwards. And I was like, it caught me off guard. I was like, whoa, like that's not good. And he was obviously in discomfort. And then you see him walk out of the care center. Like you said, you're like, whoa, wow, that's great. Like, awesome. Right. And then, you know, we'll see. Well, who knows? I mean, just, I guess all we can say is hope you're well, and hopefully it's nothing serious.
Another big wreck that didn't really get enough attention until people's, the in-cars were shown later. The Corey LaJoie wreck at the end. I think he said that was his first flip ever. He went airborne, rode the fence to the finish. Josh Berry looked like also got a little bit of air, and LaJoie may have sort of come down on top of his car a little bit. So that didn't look too fun. But again, one of the products of super speedway racing and why there's so much hand-wringing over it at times. But everybody was okay except for Jones. And hopefully Jones, whatever happened there, he will heal quickly if he is indeed injured enough to be out. Jordan, real quick before we continue, we should talk about FanDuel, because we've been talking a lot about this since it launched in North Carolina. But now the NBA playoffs have started, NHL playoffs are starting. And of course, you could bet on NASCAR races, and man, the odds for Talladega, you know, this stuff, Reddick was not going to be one of the favorites today. You know what I mean?
No.
And if you had some money on Reddick, I don't know why. Even know why you would have put money on Reddick.
Can I just flip it really quick? There was probably a good amount of people that had money on Michael McDowell, because the odds on Michael McDowell, what were they, at 4,500 plus 4,500?
Yeah.
I mean, and like we both wrote it. Like, that's the guy that you want to throw some money on. There was probably some people coming to the finish line of that race going, oh, yeah.
Exactly. Or, I mean, Keselowski was one of the top three in odds. But it's still, you know, because the super speedways are so unpredictable, you're getting way better odds than a normal race. You know what I mean? Like, so they're longer odds. I think maybe the top one was like plus 950, plus 1,000. So pretty good. But, you know, if you are in North Carolina specifically Right now, new customers for FanDuel can get $200 in bonus bets guaranteed when you place your first $5 bet. So you just go to FanDuel.com/teardown to sign up. Please use our code. We'd appreciate that. Then you can bet on from everything from individual race winners to prop bets to which driver is going to take home the championship, all in an app that is safe, secure, super easy to use. I don't know if you guys caught Dirty Mo Doe this week, also Dirty Mo podcast, but they were talking about how the matchup bets specifically, like, you know, typically you look at the matchup bets and you're like the head-to-head ones, and you're like, okay, well, this guy's going to beat this guy. He has a better track history. You know, I think Letarte's advice this week was, hey, take all the guys with the longer odds and just sit back and watch it. Maybe try to parlay them or round robin them or something, because, you know, you're going to end up with a better situation because there's just no telling what happens. You're like, you could have McDowell in a matchup bet and then he wrecks. Where did he end up finishing? He ended up finishing, where is he? 31st. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Wow. 31st. So yeah, you would have been sitting pretty with McDowell and, you know, up until the last 100 yards or whatever. Right. So anyway, you know, you just never know. But so start your engines with $200 in bonus bets, win or lose, when you place your first $5 bet. Again, that is FanDuel.com/teardown to get started. FanDuel is an authorized gaming operator of NASCAR. But you must be 21 and present in North Carolina. First online real money wager only. A $10 deposit is required. The bonus is issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. If you have a gambling problem, call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. Jordan, you are on site at Talladega. And what do you think you'll be writing on The Athletic after this race?
I mean, it's probably going to be Toyota strategy, which inside that and just kind of walk people through what happened and how they ended up in victory lane. It's, I mean, it took a little bit of luck there at the end, but they put themselves in position to be lucky. So I think you look for that in The Athletic tomorrow morning. I will be up late writing that.
Okay. I have a story on The Athletic that, I don't know, people seem to think it was an interesting story. McKenna Hasse, the dirt racer. For those of you who followed me all the way since the JeffGluck.com days, I had done an interview with her way back, I think 5 years ago. She has one of the most interesting stories in motorsports because she was knew nothing of racing whatsoever until she was randomly in a mall on vacation and there was a Casey Kane autograph signing and they had no idea who he was and they kind of like looked over and they're like, who is that guy? I don't know. Somebody said NASCAR driver or something. So they're like, whatever. They start walking away. Well, Casey thought that his thing had just ended. And so he kind of like called after him like, oh, did you guys want an autograph and you missed out? So they met him, took a picture with him, all this stuff. And they're like, well, that was cool. Like, who is this guy? They started watching racing. So she started learning about racing and completely on her own, sort of discovered all this as a teenager, put together a marketing plan, made her own race team, race dreams come true. She's like a whiz at finance stuff, marketing stuff, all this stuff, has always gotten her own sponsors. Now she's gotten to the point where she races sprint cars with Casey on the same track, by the way, in the same races. But they had a full circle moment this is what I wrote about the story, because one of the things she would do to fund her race team was go door to door selling Interstate batteries, like AA and AAA batteries, because Interstate had like a fundraising program for like sports teams. I don't think it was intended for racing, but hey, raise money for your sports team if you sell batteries, right? So at the time she'd emailed or sent a letter to Interstate way back then. And she had said, hey, listen, you know, maybe someday can you look at my marketing plan and maybe someday, you know, if I'm big enough, you can sponsor me. Well, I think 11 years later now, Interstate, she reconnected with them and Interstate has agreed to sponsor her sprint car. And so she hadn't had a crew chief or anything. So much more details in the story of that, but you can read it on The Athletic and you can read all our coverage at theathletic.com/NASCAR. Of course, we really appreciate your support because while this podcast is fun, The Athletic is our day job. So, thank you for supporting us there and reading our work. All right. So, what does this race win mean today for Tyler Reddick? He's now fifth in points. We've talked about, again, we keep going back and forth on this guy, right? Like all last year, we were down on his team because they couldn't put together clean pit stops, and we thought he was going to be out in round one. And then he goes all the way to the final eight. This year, we've been talking again, oh, 2311, the pit crews, all this stuff, right? And now he gets a much needed win. He's actually ahead of Denny Hamlin in points, which is like, what, huh?
Yeah.
So what do you make of this win for Tyler Reddick, who has not been the guy that you think is even going to finish a lot of these super speedway races? Although he did win one of the duels earlier this year.
Yeah, he's kind of underrated on super speedways. I think at the beginning of his career, he struggled a lot to finish these races and put himself in position, but he's really gotten better at this. Overall, in the grand scheme of things, I think we both agree that Tyler Reddick is one of those guys that can win just about any given week. He's got that ability. Obviously, we know what he can do on road courses. He's really good on intermediate tracks as well. He's getting better on short tracks. So maybe, I guess you're going to say it's weakness. That would probably be that. The talent is there. 2311 has fast cars, but they have not had his consistency. It seems like they just kind of keep stubbing their toe at times. But Tyler Reddick is an elite talent. I mean, this is what he is. And you look at his season now, and I'm looking at it, and he's got five straight top 10 finishes. And, you know, he could have won earlier this year at Las Vegas. He is doing the things that he was signed to do. He was thought to be a potential A-level superstar driver, and he's kind of doing that for them. Like, he is giving them the results. He's got multiple wins now. He's a guy that you look at and say, okay, if we can build around him, like, we can give him a pit crew, we can do these things, there's no reason we can't go out there and win 5-6 races a year. And I think we're starting to see that now. And the consistency is really starting to run into form. And you look at this stretch of races, man, like, this is Kansas in a couple weeks, Darlington, 600. Like, these are racetracks where these guys got to eat. And I think they're going to get a couple more. I really do. I think this team is really on the upswing. And I'll even throw Bubba Wallace in there too. And I know this isn't, you know, Bubba got caught up in that wreck and everything, but he's been doing really well too. Like, he's been finishing races well. And he's, you know, before today, really, he had built up kind of a nice buffer between himself and the playoff cut line. What 2311 has done is really impressive. It's just, they do have to show that they can do this over a period of time. They also need to show they can do this in the playoffs. And that's the thing too, is, that's been a little bit of an issue for them. But for a team that's in its fourth year, like, this is pretty remarkable. Like, this is not easy to do.
And remember, this team was started from scratch. So, yes. I mean, this was not,
isn't a track house situation.
Yeah. And I don't want to take anything away from track house because they've done obviously a tremendous job with completely transforming the culture there and turning into like a championship caliber organization. So this is not a shot at Trackhouse, but, you know, they bought an existing team and sort of made tweaks and put their own, you know, marks spin on it, or what marks. Yeah. Marks, yeah. Put his own marks on it. Yeah.
there you go.
So, you know, and it's worked for them, but with 2311, it was that they started from nothing essentially. So, yes, this is very hard to do. And, you know, look, Reddick was one of my final four picks for this year. And the way that his pit crew's been has had me very nervous. So I'm like, dang it, this is going to look so dumb because it's going to cost them in the playoffs. And, but, you know, this is a reminder that, hey, if you can win just one race in these rounds and make it there, that solves a lot. And, you know, the playoffs stack up pretty well for him. That's why he made the final eight last year. So we will see. Another thing about 2311, obviously, is Michael Jordan. And we talked about that at the start of the show, but honestly, I mean, tremendous for NASCAR, right? We can see it internally here at The Athletic, right? Like, we put in our Slack channel, we ping our news team, right? And we say, hey, you guys want a story on Talladega? Because Michael Jordan's team just won. And they're all, they're excited about it, right?
Yeah.
They're excited because that resonates with far, far beyond NASCAR. And I think the point was made by some people that, like, these clips of Michael Jordan celebrating with Bo and Victory Lane and the interview he did with Jamie Little. That's great for NASCAR. Tremendous free publicity. And Denny has that quote in the media center where he said something like, yes, 2311 is very important to NASCAR. And you know, sort of tongue in cheek in a way, but not, because This is why, in a lot of ways, I think Denny always feels so emboldened to be able to take the stances that he does. Like, he's got MJ with him. You know what I mean? Like, this is, you literally cannot put a price tag on how much this means to NASCAR to have that much. I mean, the credibility that he lends, not only to just, oh, okay, I'm an owner, you know, his name is on it, but like his genuine, true enthusiasm for the races. And then you hear Billy Scott talking about, it's not only with Cup, and you know, we see him at the track all the time that you get so used to it, but Billy Scott saying, hey, not only does he watch Cup races, he watches every Xfinity and every truck race. This is Michael Jordan, right? You think he's got a zillion things to do. On Friday night, he's sitting down and watching truck races because he loves NASCAR that much and he's that into it. And he says to Jamie Little, like, this scratches the competitive itch for him. I mean, that is so, again, you cannot even fathom how much that means to NASCAR, I think. And just the attention that that can get as that gets into the wider sports world. But it's almost been like underplayed because you haven't seen him in victory lane yet, right? Like, you've seen him when Bubba makes the playoffs, but you haven't seen him in victory lane. This is an important step.
Yeah, 100% agree with everything you said. And it's also been underplayed too, because MJ kind of wants it to be underplayed though. Like, he, you know, he wants to be low key. It's not like he's out there being front facing. He very much tries to just be kind of one of the guys. Like, I mean, I've literally watched him, this is a year ago actually, at this race. Like, I watched him show up. He times it just right. It's crazy how they know how to do it. He shows up just right before invocation and everything, so that way there's minimal time on pit road and people, you know, not just, you know, fans like wanting to see him and that kind of thing. But I have witnessed it firsthand of, like, he is just one of the guys. Like, he comes up, you know, comes into the pit box, goes and greets everybody on the team, shakes their hand, how you doing, jokes around. Like, this isn't just like he's writing a check and he's just here just because. He's doing it because he loves it. And that comes through. And the reaction to him winning today tells you everything of what it means to him and how genuine his feelings for doing this is. We've seen a lot of celebrities, a lot of big names come and go over the years who've come in and been, you know, co-owners of race teams, and however you want to think that, you can. And their enthusiasm and involvement was minimal in a lot of cases at best. That's not the case in this. He is very involved, very demanding. Like, you know, especially now since he sold the Hornets, you like hear people like he's in the meetings now even more, kind of involving himself maybe in areas that he doesn't have necessarily some of the expertise. But again, that just shows he wants to be part of this. Like, he's not just some name on the company. Like, he's part of this. He wants to do this, and I think that's good to see. And you know, when your team that Michael Jordan owns is having success and winning races, and he's there party, you know, taking part of the celebration, like, you know, that's only a good thing. Only a good thing.
Totally. I mean, I totally agree with you. And also a good thing. I mean, I don't know how Bo Reddick can ever have more bragging rights at school for the rest of his life. I mean,
he's got the greatest like show and tell video or like whatever the rest of his life.
I mean, talk about like a profile picture when you're in high school or something, like Michael Jordan holding you and high fiving you and.
Oh, profile. Like, that thing would be like for the rest of my life, that'd be on my social media accounts.
That's what I'm saying. Profile pic on social media. What was your thing on? Were you thinking of, I'm not talking about dating sites, Jordan. Did you take that as a dating site?
No, I'm just saying in general, like, you know.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it would be pinned tweet. Is that what you're saying? Oh,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I don't care how old you are. You're like, dude, me and MJ right here.
Yeah, we're tight.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
Uncle Mike.
Tyler Reddick afterwards says, you know, makes the point that, you know, it's MJ. He knows him for the shoes. Mm-hmm. He says, whose shoes are these, right? But he doesn't really know for the basketball player as much.
Yeah, it was 25 years ago, you know.
Yeah, no, I get that. But I mean, that also is, you know, the fact that the Jordan brand was on the winning car today also is. Those paint schemes have been fantastic.
Oh my God, they're ridiculous. Whoever does them, just like remarkable. Like some of the just beautiful cars.
Yep, I agree. All right, well, let's talk about the was it a good race poll? Because Jordan, I mean, you're laughing, but so for all the talk, Okay.
No, that's fine. It's a long season. I've lost a few in a row. I lost a few weeks in a row. All good. It happens. It's, you know, you win some, you lose some. It's ups and downs. You know, all good. We're good.
Hold on now. Hold on. Okay.
I know where you're going to go. Go ahead.
No, please. Here's the thing, Jordan. I was down 4-1. Big Joe Wall was texting me today. Okay. I won the clash. I was up 1-0. Then I lost the first four regular season races. I was down 4-1. It was not looking good for me, was it? Yeah. And then you started doing this straw poll of yours, right?
FYI, I've been doing the straw poll for a long time.
Okay, well, guess what? It ain't working for you, buddy.
It's worked before because it won me a championship, buddy, because I was also down like 3-1 last playoffs, and I came back and won. So, like, again.
Oh, so you cheated then, too. Okay.
And cheated. Cool. By the way, can I go back to what I said now? It is great because all week long, I've had people slide in my DMs going, hey, can I be part of your straw poll? And I've had multiple people. One gentleman in Victory Lane today. I was in Victory Lane taking the celebration in and, you know, writing for The Athletic. And guy comes up to me, introduced me, hey, big fan of the podcast, by the way. I'm like, hey, he was a Tyler Reddick fan. He had a Tyler Reddick hat on, and he was really excited. And I was like, that's cool. You got to see your favorite driver win and be in Victory Lane and take part of this, and, you know, et cetera. And he's like, pleasure to meet you. Thanks for listening. And I'm about to kind of walk away because I go do something. He's like, hey, by the way, here's what I think the number is going to be today. And he lists his reasons why. He's like, just that's my thought. So I'm just saying, like, the straw poll theory, it's growing, man. It's a movement, Jeff. It's a movement.
Look, many people have made the point that it's not that you are not cheating and that it's a gray area, right? Yeah. Even though I agree with Danny
that argument
on his podcast. Look, because we are predicting what people are going to say about the race, and you are asking people what they think about the race. So you're getting a sneak preview. It's fine. Whatever. I'm still gonna win anyway, and I'm just gonna take the high road.
You're great. We win. That's cool. Awesome. I'm just having fun. You know, you're taking this way too serious. You get all worked up about nothing. Like, don't give yourself a heart attack.
5-5. And listen, I don't think this race is gonna get very good numbers today. I think yes, despite the amount of lead changes, I think people are not going to be very high on this race. So what am I going to say here? I'm going to say 63%.
Woo. Wow.
Pretty low, huh? Yeah.
It's a little lower than I thought. The gentleman in Victory Lane thought it was going to be 82, and then he listed his reasons why. He's like, Denny crashed out, exciting finish. You know, you did see some things. The strategy thing kind of shook things up a little bit. I'm like, 82? I'm like, yeah, it's... it's probably a little high. So there's somewhere in the middle. What was your guess? 63. Oof. I'm going to say 67. And I think it'll hit the 70s, but I'm just going to. And by the way, just want to point out, I really wanted to go like 64, 65. But because I'm the bigger man, because I'm a sportsman and I'm honorable, and I do the right thing, I want to Price is Right you. I gave you a little margin there. So there we go. 67.
Well, my strategy is I think it's going to be in the 50s, and I went higher than
I thought.
You think
it's going to be in the 50s?
I went higher than I thought so that you would go high, because I knew you wouldn't go that low.
You think it's in the 50s?
Yeah. Well, why are people going to think the race is good? They complained about it the entire time. Texas last week, 72.9.
You think this was in the 50s?
High 50s? Yeah, I could see it.
Wow. Just run me through your, like.
Okay, listen, again, the three wide racing, for the people that are on Twitter and voting in this, they do not like it anymore. They think they're all onto what's happening, right? Like, they all know why, and so they don't think it's good. They think it's just, you might as well run single file. They're not impressed by the three wide racing because they just know they're saving fuel. They don't want to see the fuel saving. And then the run to the finish, they felt like nobody could make moves. Everybody was locked in line. So until the very last moment when they just run and wreck, I'm telling you, people, I don't think people like it.
I'm just going to read you. Let me open up my DMs. I opened up my DMs here. What? What? I'm giving you a. You want to know what the people think? I'm giving you. I'm giving you what the people think.
Okay, go ahead. Give me your straw.
I don't want to give this person's name away. He goes, thought it was a good race. The fuel save and number of commercials didn't bug me, but I could see some having issues. But I could see some people having issues with that. Getting a green flag-ish finish is always nice at a drafting track. He was going to vote yes.
Well, the commercials, I think I let's talk about the commercials for just a second, because I think the commercials actually will knock it down a few percentage points. That sucked. That really sucked as a at home viewer today. Ooh. And look, I get they got to pay the bills and blah, blah, blah. And you're not going to have a commercial free race like F1. It's never going to happen. And all the things, and they just signed even more money and it's never going to happen. Right. But like, dude, I mean, full screen ad after ad, after ad, it just, you know, going to commercial break with five to go in stage two, and they tease, is the big one coming or something? And you know, you're just like, and then I don't know. It just, it's frustrating. Cause and Jaws. I don't know if you remember that site. They always keep track of the commercials for, they've been doing this for years now. They have archives going back, I don't know, to way far back. Anyway, they said from what their stat is, and again, I don't know how this compares, but minutes of race broadcast, 165 minutes of traditional commercials, 50 minutes of side-by-side commercials, 11. So you had 61 minutes out of 165. Oh no, I guess it was out of 215. Am I reading that right? Anyway, an hour of commercials essentially for, I don't know, what was it? 3 hour race?
Three
48 minute race. You had to watch an hour of commercials. So that's probably par for the course, but I'm telling you, man, it's like, I could see it. Hey, you know, when nothing's happening, and they took a lot in early, but when there's five to go in a stage, when the pit stop's already done and the action's about to pick up and they go to commercial, oh, it was painful. It really was painful. And I get nothing's going to change. It's pointless to even complain about it. People at Fox are going to get mad at me for even saying that much, but it's not a good viewing experience to do that to people, especially when you watch. Everybody watches so much F1 now, and like, they don't have commercials. So you're like,
yeah, you watch races like are also an hour and a half though too.
And there's no commercials
for an hour and a half. Sure.
Okay. Well, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, this race is 3 hours and 48 minutes. So, I mean, I'm not trying to defend Fox, but the other side of it is, how are you going to have a broadcast go for 3 hours and 48 minutes commercial free?
I don't know. How do you make a broadcast go for an hour and a half commercial?
Because it's a lot easier to do that for an hour and a half because you're not eating up so much time. So it's going to be cheaper for a sponsor to come in and say,
How does the World Cup soccer?
Okay. And again, how long is a soccer match?
I don't know.
90 minutes. And they have halftime. And that's when they run commercials.
Okay. So run triple the number of ads that happen during a stage break for NASCAR then.
That would be something worth exploring if you could do that. But then how long are the cautions going to be then?
They're long.
Yeah, they're going to be even longer then.
Then we don't miss any green flag action. Wouldn't that be a trade off that everybody would take? If they're
I'm not trying to defend a commercial breaks here because of course I would love to see races run without commercial breaks. But I also am realistic enough to know like you can't have that kind of window on network TV of that size and expect it to go commercial free. And if you run them during this,
I don't know,
you run them during stage breaks or anything else, like you're just going to push it out longer. And then the question is, okay, if we're going to have a 5 minute commercial break in stage two, people might flip the channel, Jeff. Like they may not come back. Like you do have to retain. You do have
to
retain
people. Halftime of a soccer game. They have periods of a hockey game.
They don't run 5 minute commercial breaks. They don't. Well, don't give me that. I mean, it's true. Like they don't run 5 minute commercial blocks.
You're always spoiled when you're at the track because you don't.
I know.
Get it. You know. But I'm telling you, today was not. Not a positive.
Listen, in a perfect world, I agree with you. In a perfect world, it'd be great. I don't know how you can conceivably do it.
I don't think they want to even look into it. They're happy with how it is. So Nobody seems to care, but that's fine. So speaking of something people do care about, I don't know how much you care about it. Scoring pylons.
Oh, I've been waiting for this.
Scoring pylons, everybody.
Just gonna
kick back. Are you excited to talk about scoring pylons?
I'm just gonna let you cook, baby.
Why am I gonna cook? You're the one that doesn't even seem to think it's that big of a thing.
No,
you
go ahead, and you go first.
Oh, you're thinking that I'm gonna go on a rant, and then you're gonna sit back and go, come on, Jeff, it's not that big of a deal. Why are you making such a big deal?
No, like there's gonna be truth in what you there's some truth in what you say.
What is it that I'm gonna say?
I want to hear it, but you won't give it. You won't give the monologue.
I'm not. How do you know? I don't have a monologue. Here's my take. Here's my take. All right.
Austin.
Texas takes down the scoring pylon. Okay. That you're smiling, but that's a bigger issue than Talladega taking down the scoring pylon. But they are getting conflated because they had back-to-back weeks. So everybody goes, what the hell? Are they suddenly taking down scoring pylons? What is going on here? Right? I happen to think they're slightly different issues. The Texas one is a scoring pylon that people actually use and need. It's one of those ones like a Kansas, Vegas, Charlotte, where it's right there on the front stretch. You can see the laps remaining. You can see the whole running order, all that stuff. Like, you need that. Drivers can look at it. Fans can look at it. To lose that, like last week at the end of the race, I'm on pit road. I'm trying to, you know, and I texted you. What did I text you after the race? Who finished where? I don't know. Because you're used to looking up and being like, all right, well, that guy got a top 10. All right, you know. How are speed, you know, and I get they have the video boards and they at Texas, it's Big Haas, but it's more than just the top few drivers that you need to see. So you need pylons at these places, and to take them down is doing a disservice to people. Talladega, personally, I think is a little bit different. If you remember, you know this, the Talladega one is actually it was actually behind the media center. Behind, sort of like when you're driving down the road in the infield to the past the driver owner lot, it's not on the front stretch. It's up on a hill back. It's for that. The Talladega one was for the people that are camping in the infield that don't know what's going on, in my opinion. That one was not really one that was being used by everybody, I don't think, on the front stretch. That was much farther away. I don't think it was a very prominent, if I recall, I don't think it was a very prominent pylon. That was one where you're camping in the infield, you can't see a screen. You're like, well, I don't know who's winning right now. I can't see anything. I can only see one turn when they come by. Oh yeah, okay, that car's winning. Also, at Talladega of all places, you probably don't need the pylon as much, except to see who wins at the very end, like if it in a close finish, right? Because they're all in a pack. So it's not really like you're not losing track of who's running where. They're all running together. So I'm not really as mad about the Talladega one. I think pylons should stay, and I think they need pylons. The problem is, and this happened, I'm trying to think if it was either last year or 2 years ago. This happened at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, not with their pylon part, but you know the pagoda, NASCAR Chasm's favorite at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. For those of you who have been there, there's the part of the pagoda that has, I think, like the top five horizontally on it. Maybe it's even the top three, or top five. They had turned it off. And people are like, why don't they have this on? Doug Bowles had said that the company that made the parts for this, it's obsolete. They no longer exist at all. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that's what happened with the Texas one. And I'm told that's what happened with the Talladega one.
That is correct about Talladega.
So you can't, these companies that made these pylons 25, 30 years ago or whatever, you can't just, it's not like a car where you go on Craigslist and you're like, all right, well, I need this part for this 1975 car or whatever. Like you can't replace this stuff. So you have to take it down, right? So now what are you going to put in its place? Okay. Well, I asked around, I was told today, I was shocked by this. A new pylon costs around $5 million. Is that what you heard something along those lines? $5 million for new pylon. Okay. Well, I do think it's needed. So I, you know, apologies to Texas. I know they have Big Hoss. I think you got to put it back up at Texas. Talladega, again, I'm a little bit, I don't know that that is absolutely necessary there. You would think, though, in the days of like LED screens, like North Wilkesboro just put that beautiful one up last year.
Indy's got one too. I mean, they're
Indy's got theirs. Yep. Those look beautiful, right? And they can be different things at different times. They don't always have to show the running order. They're not locked into that. So, I think it is a bigger deal than NASCAR and other people thought it was going to be, because scoring pylons are a very traditional thing and they are used. I mean, I, even in the press box at a lot of these tracks, as I'm looking out the window at the track, as I'm looking at the video board, as sometimes I have a scoring monitor on the monitor, TV monitor, I'm still looking at the pylon during the race. It's attached to scoring. It's important, but you know, the Talladega one specifically doesn't bother me as much, but I'm also told that they're not going to start taking down pylons. This was sort of like these two were old and they got taken down. Why you shake your head?
Because I also want a beer and I'm pissed because I lost the bet.
What happened?
Well, I bet somebody that you were going to have a rant about pylons and they thought that you were going to be a little bit more measured about it. And I think this definitely was more measured and you didn't really rant and rave. And I'm really mad that I have to base someone off a bet now.
That's really nice. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
I thought I knew you well enough. I thought, based on our previous conversation, I've been waiting for this all podcast. I was like, man, we're going to this, right? Like, am I gonna have to bring this up? And man, you were too, like, you were like normal and calm. You're never normal and calm. Like,
I Talladega specifically, and in Daytona, aside from qualifying, where, and I get that, you know, a lot of drivers made that point. The number pops up, you hear the big pop from the crowd. Remember 88 used to pop up there, Dale Jr., people be like, whoa, that's really cool. But there at places where there's pack racing, it's not as important. I just think that a place like Texas, like, I don't want to lose, I'm not advocating for pylons to go.
Do you
away.
Want pylons removed everywhere, it sounds like?
And also, you know, the technology is not good enough yet. And I think this has been acknowledged that, you know, looking at your phones is not a viable replacement for that. So, you know, the Wi-Fi is still not good enough to, and you don't want people looking at their phones to find out where the running order is. And I don't think it's not like, I don't get the sense they're like, all right, let's have everybody look at their phones. Let's take down the pylons. I'm told that's not the case. So there's no rant because
I know it sucks. Okay. Cost me a beer. Well,
I'm sorry. That's just these are the facts. That's just how
you,
it is.
So. When have you ever let the facts get in the way of a classic patented Jeff Gluck rant?
I think they're justified.
Why start today when I've got a wager on this?
It wasn't justified for rant worthy. I'm sorry. You know what is justified for rant worthy?
Oh, no.
Do you know?
What, Jeff?
You know what I'm going to say?
Because I know what you're going to say.
Shameful. Shameful. It's one thing to not know J. Cole and to be like, I've never even heard of this guy. It's another thing to not know Taylor Swift. And I'm not a Swift.
Whoa. I know Taylor Swift.
Okay.
You get it right.
In our, I'm going to explain, in our message with our F1 writers, our group text this week, Jordan Bianchi of the Teardown fame revealed that he has never one time listened to a Taylor Swift song all the way through and
willingly.
He could not name three Taylor Swift songs, period. That is unbelievable, honestly.
How is it unbelievable? Like, why, where, like, so what, why willingly would I go and listen to a Taylor Swift song?
You don't have a choice. She's ubiquitous.
I do. I literally.
She is everywhere.
I don't listen to the radio and I'm in my car. I'm on the phone making calls or I'm catching up on podcasts. I don't listen to music at home. When I listen to music, when I'm working out or I'm doing something, I've got my playlist I listen to. I don't know where. I don't know where I would like willingly say, hey, I want to hear a Taylor Swift song. let me, you know, let me fire that up. If I'm at a bar and I'm going to do touch tunes, which I love to do, I'm not picking Taylor Swift. I've got other things I go to.
But other people have, and so you have definitely heard a Taylor Swift song.
What I'm saying, though. I'm not saying I haven't heard one. Like, I'm sure you can't even name.
Have you heard of Shake It Off?
See, that was the only one I'd probably know, is Shake It Off.
Bad Blood?
No.
You Belong With Me? That's a classic.
No. You could, like, you play a game right now. Let's play a game. Pick, like, let's just pick, like, make up some song names and, like, throw a couple Taylor
how
Swift
about,
ones.
How about, surely you've heard of We Are Never Getting Ever Getting Back Together. That's
no. Never. Never. In all sincerity, never heard of that. The only Taylor Swift song I could think of off the top of my head would be Shake It Off.
How about the Look What You Made Me Do?
No idea.
That song.
No idea. Where do you live? Okay, so do you choose to listen to Taylor Swift songs?
You can't escape it.
Where have you heard them? Do you like fire them up in the radio or what?
It's part of pop culture.
Like, but where do you,
I couldn't even tell you. I mean, obviously my girls listen to them, but that's not why.
See, that's a big difference. I don't got young girls.
No. You think I've only known about Taylor Swift songs in the last 5 years?
I don't know. I'm asking you where you've listened to them and then you really haven't.
Everywhere, dude.
Like where? I don't listen to the radio, so I don't listen to it.
I just don't understand how you can go through the world. And again, I'm not even a Taylor Swift fan.
Like,
I think she's overrated.
The only chance I would say I would ever have of hearing her would probably be like the Super Bowl. If she did the Super Bowl halftime show, I'd be like, oh, okay.
A mall, an airport, grocery store.
But that's
how
it was with Rihanna too, though. Like Rihanna, I didn't really know her catalog. Then she did the halftime Super Bowl. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, okay.
I just cannot believe.
And again, that I work but with the mall is
who's
different.
Not,
though,
like, by the way, in their 70s, who's younger than me, that can't name three Taylor Swift
but
songs.
Like,
surely
again,
our
like,
listeners can.
I'm sure. I've been at the mall. I've been sporting events. They've like played Taylor Swift songs. I haven't recognized that it's Taylor Swift, or I just was oblivious to it. Like I don't really pay any attention to that.
Huh? Who's this?
No, never. I'm busy.
All right. Well,
like they play music at the track today, and I was like, "Well, I don't pay attention to like what they're playing." I'm like, "I got my thing going on."
Okay.
I don't got time for that. I don't have the bandwidth to worry about pop culture songs. I got too much other stuff going on in my world.
Again, it's not even a stretch, but it's fine. It's fine.
I don't see the big deal.
I just
like,
wanted people to know what I have to deal with here.
No, it's not a deal. How is it dealing with it? Like, I completely own like my pop culture when it comes to music is there's a glaring hole there. If you want to talk about movies or anything else, that's cool. We can do that all day. But like when it comes to music, no.
What was that movie with Brendan Fraser back in the Encino Man?
You know, Encino Man. Yeah, Sean Austin and Encino Man, Pauly Shore.
Encino Man, where he's a caveman. And he like gets de-thawed from the ice and he doesn't know anything about the modern world. That's Jordan Bianchi when it comes
only
to
when
pop
it comes
culture.
To only when it comes to music.
Okay. All right. Well, any final thoughts, Jordan, before we...
No.
People have already probably tuned out at this point, but...
That's good. Now, no final thoughts. Typical Talladega race. I think it was a good Talladega race. Lots of storylines to come out of this. Playoffs or the stretch for the playoffs, I think, is shaping up to be interesting because you look at the guys on that bubble or close to it. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun.
I will be at Dover next week, and I will be at Kansas because you are going to Formula Un in Miami. So how are we going to do the podcast from there? You gonna do it from Dolphin Stadium or something?
Yeah, I'll find a spot somewhere.
You're just gonna be like, Max, Lewis, get out of here. I need your garage stall to.
Yeah, you know me. I'm a big ask for forgiveness and ask for permission, guys. I'll just walk in like, hey guys, excuse me.
You guys want to come?
Yeah, if you guys want to come on the podcast, that's great. Otherwise, I need y'all to keep it down.
Yeah, they will be tearing it down because that's what they do after the F1 races. So maybe you can just go in there. Yeah. Just walk right into the Red Bull garage and just be like, all right, well, you guys are good. So
yeah, just need you to all keep it down for like an hour.
Don't turn off your Wi-Fi here for an hour. Yeah.
Don't turn off the Wi-Fi.
Hey, I mean, whatever happens with F1, they're probably at the same time, Kansas and Miami, but you'll be done before me.
Yeah, so. Be good. I get to watch the finish of the race anyway, so that'd be good.
Probably.
I don't know how we're going to...
I'm looking forward to Dover,
it'll be a fun podcast because I'm going to have like no clue about what happened for the first, 300 laps of Kansas. It's 267 lap race.
So. I almost took a cheap shot and said, you have no clue anyway, but that would have been nice and that wouldn't have been accurate. So I wouldn't have done that, but you might have said that to me. So
no, right. I'm nothing but nice to you and supportive.
So
I compliment
nice.
You all the time.
So nice.
You were on
betting
Sirius
the beers that
week.
I'm.
Hang on, yeah. No. Uh-huh. Let me give you a snapshot into what it's like having Jeff Gluck as a teammate.
Oh, okay.
You were on Sirius this week, and I sent you a nice message like, "Hey, you sound great. Love you, buddy." Did I get anything back from you? No, nothing. Crickets.
You're not presenting the full context.
That is the full context. I literally said, "You sound great. Keep it up," or something to that effect. Love you, buddy.
Okay. The reason you sent that is because Danielle Trotta, our friend, who is a big Teardown listener, you texted her during the show and made a comment about me on the show, which she then told me about. So then I mentioned you on the air, and that's when you texted me, "Oh, you're doing great." So
you are doing great. I compliment you all the time and I get crickets.
You only present the second half of this stuff.
There was no second half. I complimented you.
You make me start coughing again.
Oh, good Lord.
I got to go. Oh, I got to save my voice for Dover and my sanity. Everybody, thanks so much, as always, for listening. And we will talk to you next time on The Teardown. See you, everybody.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.